Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. Okay, so today we had our community work afternoon, and it felt very satisfying to be able to have a large group of us working in the forest, working on a certain level, rather mundane things, you know, pulling branches out of the forest, making fire clearances, carrying firewood, and I got to spend the whole afternoon working on a chainsaw. As the abbot, I don't have that opportunity that often. I'm usually doing something a bit more cerebral, or, you know, involved in administration and stuff like that. So it was nice just to be out in the forest and working with the body. Although this body is getting old, it's really so. There's a nice simplicity, a directness to that. That's very satisfying. And the end of the day, you look it's great seeing what we accomplished. And it's really, really quite lovely. So it's very, very satisfying to directly see the results. And also, there's a certain element of keeping things fairly simple, and by having that physical engagement, I think that's helpful for in our practice. Our practice of Dhamma can easily be anything but simple sometimes, because there is a very ordinary tendency within us to complicate things, to make things more complicated than is necessary, and more complicated than is certainly good for us. And the Buddha points to there's a word that he uses for, say, complication in the Pali language is papancha. And it can be complication, proliferation, like conceptual proliferation, objectification. Those are the nuances of the meaning. Yeah, it's a tendency that we have as human beings, when we don't apply wisdom, when we don't apply understanding, and we get caught up in the tendencies that are not so useful or skillful. So that there's traditionally the avenues by which we complicate or proliferate are the aspects of tanha, of ditti, of mana. And those are, tanha is desire, so that sense of being proliferating, complicating through desire, wanting to gratify, wanting to stimulate, wanting to create some kind of gratification. So through that quality of desire, then we proliferate and complicate. Or through the avenue of ditti, which is views. We have a view, an opinion. There's the feeling of, it shouldn't be this way. That person shouldn't be like this. Why aren't they like this? And it makes for complications. And then through mana, the sense of self, the sense of a feeling of I-ness, that feeling of me. As separate from, again, sort of objectified. We objectify the sense of me. And then, of course, we end up separated. And that's that we complicate things in that way. So learning how to understand and pay attention to how that happens. And it's just through the normal conduit of the contact of the senses. It's just is normal, it's ordinary that we have sense contact. We see, we hear, we smell, we taste, we touch. We can't not do that. And then what we sense through the senses is there's a feeling, and in a sense a pleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling, neutral feeling, and there's in a discourse that the Buddha talks about. One of the discourses that the Buddha talks about the habit of papancha, of proliferation, is the Buddha says, what one feels, one perceives. What one perceives, one thinks about. What one thinks about, one complicates. that sound familiar? So and recognizing that process, how we do that, and recognizing that we, rather than being beset by complication, we can actually engage with mindfulness and awareness of that process of sensing, feeling, perceiving, and maybe thinking about. But not being swept up by the habit of the complication, objectification, proliferation, so that it's not something that comes back and bites us, which is what happens so often. It's like the things that we like with that sense of desire. We sense we experience a pleasant feeling. And then, we want it or want things to be a certain way. We want to prolong what we like, what we feel pleasurable. We want it to stay that way. And then we start to plot and plan of how to get it that way, how to get what we want, how to get what we desire. And it becomes complicated. It isn't that we don't ever want anything, but we understand that that process of how we proliferate around it is fraught with difficulty. It's just is the ability to be content with what we experience, what we get, what we receive, what we contact, is a level of satisfaction that is far greater than that chasing after things with desire and that need for gratification, stimulation. It's there's a freedom in being contented and not dragged around by that objectification, and so that understanding, that power of desire, and that we, there needs to be a caution and discernment applied, so that we're not being pulled into that vortex of complication, and the same with views, in that sense of things. Should be this way. I should be that way. Why isn't this person like that? Why aren't why isn't the world like this? Why is it? And you realize, those are just views. Sort of like that we complicate things needlessly. It's like the illustration that Ajahn Chah uses of the you know, the person who goes into the village, and especially in a country village in Thailand, you know, people, you know, they raise chickens, they raise ducks, and they're around, and you know, somebody goes in and starts proliferating of, you know, so, wow, those, you know, those chickens, they, you know, they can, they've got a kind of a nice sound when they crow, you know, why isn't a duck have a sound more like a chicken, you know, and, you know, ducks, they can't really even walk properly, why aren't they more like chickens? Chickens can run really fast. You know? And it's sort of, you know, that's kind of the level of, you know, views that we get caught up. Well, we don't see it as that. We tend to justify them and get caught up in them. But, you know, it's as, you know, when you put it on that level of trying to say, why isn't a duck more like a chicken? And, well, you know, why isn't this person like that? Why isn't the world like that? It's exactly the same. Learning how to see that more clearly, to not complicate the way we experience ourselves and the world around us with that extra layer of proliferation, complication, because views pull us that way. They pull us into that complication, and one can set those views aside, or that tendency to have to hold a view, have to have an opinion. It's like you're having to have an opinion about something. We all know people who, it doesn't matter what the subject matter, what the context is, there's always there's people who always have to have some sort of opinion about things. And it's just too much, not necessary. And to recognize for ourselves, we don't need to do that either. The sense of self, that sense of I, that gets established. And that's what mana is, that feeling of I. And I'm trying to remember this. In Alice of Wonderland, there's a really neat quote where Alice is sort of thinking about, it's kind of ruminating, pondering, you know, about her sense of self. Or was it that she feels kind of different since when she woke up in the morning. It was just like, I don't feel quite the same as when I was like this in the morning, like a certain way in the morning. And then I feel somewhat different. That's the great puzzle. And why is this? Who actually am I? And that, of course, the whole sort of story of Alice in Wonderland is the story of somebody who at the end realizes, it was just a dream, and that you realize so much of what our whole sense of I and self and comparison with others and all of the struggling to be somebody or something, you realize, it was like a dream, that when we're swept up in the dream, it seems so sort of real. And but then when you wake up from the dream, it doesn't make sense to be following that, hooked by that. And you know, that's really the same with the whole process of how we go through life and how we measure that sense of I am. That mana is that feeling of I am. And of course we keep keeps shifting. I am keeps shifting all the time. And of course it's driven by that whole process of proliferation, complication. So that as a practitioner, learning how to investigate and to reflect on that process of papancha, and like one of the ways that's really helpful is to be able to track back how the process whereby it all started, in the sense of there was a sense contact, it was pleasurable, and then then we get swept up into the whole proliferation around it. We had a sense contact that was uncomfortable, and then we define our experience, our sense of self, the world, people around that little initial feeling of discomfort, so that feeling, perception, thinking about it, proliferating about it, so that being able to track back and to recognize how that process starts to gain momentum, and it isn't as if one has to stop it or quash it or annihilate it, but it's like really learning what that experience is like, and tracking back where it starts from, and seeing that process sort of over and over again, because it's how the mind works. It doesn't matter, say, whether one has wisdom or doesn't have wisdom. It's how the mind works. There is sense contact, there is feeling, there is perception, there is thought. And that's not the problem. The problem is that complication, the proliferation, so that you're not trying to stop having any sense contact or any feeling, any emotion, any thought whatsoever. And it's like Ajahn Chah sort of asking people, is there anybody who doesn't think? Is there somebody who is able to stop thought? And he says, there's really only one person in the world who can stop thought. And sort of, anybody know who that is? And then, of course, nobody's quite sure. He gives some answers, the Buddha, arahants. And finally, Ajahn Chah said, no, it's a dead person. That's who doesn't think. So that sense of thought on a certain level is not the problem, because it's natural to have thought, but it's thought that is without wisdom, leading to complication, proliferation, that is the problem. So learning that process, understanding it, seeing it clearly, so that it can be relinquished, it can be let go, it can be channeled and transformed into something that's beneficial, that brings about a sense of well-being and clarity. So as a practitioner, learning how to track back that process of how the how we experience things. How is that built? How is it created? How is it constructed? And when we're able to do that, we understanding the nuts and bolts of the way the mind works. How that experience of happiness and suffering. How does it work? That quality of understanding And this is where, you know, when we talk about wisdom or discernment, it's not some sort of aphorism or some, you know, bit of knowledge that you gain and then you can hold on to it. It's that wisdom and discernment are the ability to see clearly and then to apply that clarity with our experience. And so that learning how to not complicate things, not objectify. There's a discourse where one of the great disciples of the Buddha, Anuruddha, he was one of the foremost meditators and had incredible powers. Anyway, one time he was sitting in the forest, reflecting, contemplating, and he had this sense of what were the distinguishing types of thoughts, thoughts of, say, of mindfulness, of applying effort, of, you know, of discernment, these aspects of thoughts. And he said, there's a variety of them. And he goes and tells the Buddha and says, these are the way that a great being thinks. These are the thoughts of a great being. And the Buddha listens to it and approves, and he says, yeah, those are all correct, but there's one last thought that is that you can't neglect or find this. It's also the thought of a great being. That's thoughts of nipapancha, so the thoughts of non-complication, thoughts of non-objectification, thoughts of non-proliferation. And so that sense of turning our attention to. So, I mean, there is thinking, but it's not complicating. There is thinking, but it's not objectifying or proliferating. It's just this, it's because the application of thought in a skillful way that helps the mind become settled, becomes clear, that sees through. I mean, is that just the word vipassana literally means seeing through. So using, sometimes we apply the thought process in order to see through things, seeing through our experience. So that directing our practice in a direction that does lead to that non-complication. And this is this is where it opens a doorway to great peace and great contentment. So I'll offer those thoughts for reflection this evening. Everybody's been pulling brush and working hard, so we don't want to go on too long. People will start proliferating in an unskillful way.